Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Well, hello and welcome to the very, very first episode of Being Brilliant. This is my very first radio show as well. I'm super excited to be here. My name is Amy Hackett-Jones and I'm a leadership and life coach and I focus on happiness and high performance. And this is really all about what it takes to be brilliant. I've been fascinated with leadership for a very long time. I've been fascinated with what it takes to be brilliant. For equally as long. And I decided to create this radio show to bring really the essence of brilliance to you, my listeners. This is what I do with my clients as a coach as well. So this evening, I have a very, very exciting person on the call. His name is Carlton Meadows. And I wanted him to be on my inaugural show because he has such a big, phenomenal dream and he's going for it. And I'm going to bring that up for you in just a moment. What really, really inspired me about him when I first met him, I think it was about 3 years ago in the States, was his drive, his focus, his commitment to this dream. And I've seen it unfold as the years have gone by, and he is in the run-up to competing at the Rio Games. He's going to be sprinting the 800 meters and he's going for gold. And not only is that a feat in and of itself, but this is why he epitomizes brilliance to the core for me and shines like a diamond, because he's 45 years old. He's defying the odds. He's defying the status quo. He's defying what we believe as possible. And a bit like Roger Bannister, when he broke the 4-minute mile, he shifted what was possible for humanity. You know, everybody believed before Roger Bannister did that his heart would explode if he ran a mile in under 4 minutes. So the whole paradigm shift was created. And Carlton, I'm sure, is going to do us proud in Rio this summer. No pressure at all, Carlton. So I'm going to invite him on right away. Here he is. Welcome, and welcome to the very first show of Being Brilliant.
Thank you, Amy. It is indeed brilliant to be hanging out with you on your inaugural show, your premiere. And it was quite the pleasure to meet you in person, and you were so composed and just kind of quiet. You know, I had no idea of the things you had achieved in your own life. So I think it's only fitting to still be friends after all these years and to get to know a little bit about what each of us is striving to contribute to the communities around us.
Absolutely. It was such a pleasure. So I want to dive straight in and just ask you a little bit more about you and your dream. First of all, I want to focus on the dream. What specifically is your dream? Just to tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, as you alluded, the dream is to set a new world record in the 800, to do something that coaches have said is impossible, which is to run an even split or a negative split, meaning that the first lap and the same lap are the same time, or the second lap is faster than the first lap. And, mm-hmm. you know, if the conventional knowledge says it's impossible, no one trains for it. So, of course,
Absolutely.
No one does it. No one's training for it. Roger had a very specific training protocol to achieve to break that 4-minute mile barrier. And, you know, I look at what I've seen as a kid growing up. In the 80s, you had people on the front of the Wheaties boxes, and you had the battle between Dave Scott and Scott Tinley, these two mm-hmm. Ironman triathletes duking it out, you know. And then Dan and Dave came along with the decathlon rivalry, and what's the guy's name from Great Britain? Haley Thomas or Daley Thomas, the big decathlete.
Daley Thompson.
And he was is a pretty hefty guy. And I'm like, you can't tell me that you have to be skinny to be a sprinter. So I begin to see things kind of unfold for other athletes, and I wanted a piece of it. And it was really a dream when I was a kid, because there was little to no athleticism in my body when I was in the neighborhood trying to play sports or little pickup games around the house. And I failed miserably. I mean, some mornings I couldn't push myself out of bed if I slept on my stomach because I was having problems with my elbows. But I didn't lose the dream, and it transitioned after I got into the military, and people wanted me to run for the Navy's run team, and then our PT evaluation was like a semi-annual pseudo-Olympic competition. So that fed the dream on a smaller scale, because I could compete and attempt to outdo everyone else at my command. And they were like, well, you don't get paid more money. I'm not going to get out there and exert that much effort. And so, you know, there was that competitiveness that carried me through the 20 years. And then after I retired, I just kind of let go of it all until I got through with physical therapy, started running again and seeing some improvement in my times. And as they say, the rest is history. Now I'm on the road to Rio and preparing for the trials in July.
Fantastic. So just go back one step a minute. So when you were a kid, what was your struggle at the time? You had the dream. Or do you know where the dream even came from? Did you see somebody on television sprinting that inspired you? Or was this someone or some moment that inspired you?
Well, I heard about Roger Bannister, you know, breaking the 4-minute mile. We had a track that was covered with coal. It was like little pieces of coal. So
wow.
I would go around that track, and, you know, it probably took me 4 minutes to just get around once. And so I didn't let go of it. And my brother was an athlete. Whatever he tried to do, he excelled at. So I had him personally living in the house with me, that whatever he did, whether it was neighborhood baseball or basketball or Pop Warner football or track and field, whatever he set out to do, he succeeded and did well at it. And so I'm his little brother trying to follow in his footsteps. It was just, I don't know. I mean, I saw pictures of Schwarzenegger and Frank Zane. I mean, there were athletes all around, I guess. And so I just figured I need to be in that mix. And I was just drawn to it, even though my body didn't look anything like theirs.
Absolutely. Wow. And so what were the sort of the biggest obstacles you had to overcome over this, you know, over your journey so far?
Of late, it's been just finding enough competitions, because the jitters you get when it's time to race are much different than what you feel when it's time to train. And so I turned in my physical, and I'm now NCAA eligible for sports, and I'll meet with a track coach this week. We actually have a home meet this Friday. So, you know, that's one of the biggest things, is just finding competitions to run a qualifying time for the trials, and then drawing a balance between work, training, and school. Because what I can do is work, what I can do is train, and what I have to do is go to school. And so as far as funding, I take the brunt of that responsibility upon myself.
Sure.
And so if it means traveling to a different state, I'll just travel to another state and take my shoes and my little book to stretch and some sweat clothes, and we train on the road.
Amazing. So tell me just a little bit more then about your work. What do you do for work? Because I know you are a high-performance body engineer, which is something that I find absolutely fascinating. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I think the research is showing more and more that a lot of what our public wants by way of fitness is not good for them, because the basic fitness level required for some of these current trends aren't found in a lot of the people who pursue them. And so what I do is I take a look at where the person is, and then design a program around what they can do. Because if a person can sit in and out of a chair or get in and out of a car, then they can do some variation of a squat. You know, it doesn't mean I'm going to advance them right into Olympic lifting and clean and jerks or anything of that nature, but we want to give them, set them up for success by getting them to do what they can do. If they can't do a push-up, no problem. I'll get some dumbbells. You know, so it's really tailoring a program to their current abilities, giving them some small successes, some confidence in their abilities, and then we make program a little more challenging as they progress, not based on my time schedule, based on how they're responding to the current training session.
Sure.
And most people, they have – go ahead.
I was going to say, do you take a holistic view as well in that you look at their nutrition, you look at the whole –
how we can help build their body up instead of tearing it down. I mean, some of the stress that's caused to the joints and the connective tissue, ligaments and tendons, it's a little harder to bounce back from. You know, if we can structure their activity around what will challenge the muscle and possibly, you know, more than likely we're going to have some damage to the muscle fiber, which improves their endurance and their hypertrophy, you know, it causes them to grow. And outside of that, we don't want to cause any unnecessary risks or present them, you know, put them in a position where they're going to be subjected to a risk when the reward is minimal at best.
Absolutely. Okay. So where are you based out of?
Out of the sunshiny Tampa Bay, Florida.
I knew you were going to say that when it's cold and here in the UK. So lots of sunshine where you are. And do you work just one-on-one in person with people, or do you have programs that you can guide people online as well, or is it just one-on-one in person?
Well, I do the one-on-ones, and then when I travel for consulting, I'll reach back to my clients via the FaceTime, or
sure.
Their Android users will do Google Hangout. And, you know, I can see them, they can see me, and, you know, they can hear the watch, and, you know, we carry on pretty much business as usual. It's just that I'm in another state. The one-on-ones, typically within 3 weeks or so, they've learned the fundamental movements. And so after that point, you know, I can coach them from a distance. I prefer to be one-on-one, but I think the technology is the second best thing because I can actually see how they're moving and correct them with some verbal cues.
Isn't it amazing the technology we have these days? I have a laptop lifestyle. I can sit in the countryside in England and coach people in Panama and all over the place.
Wow.
So it's pretty amazing what the tools we have at our fingertips these days.
Yeah,
it
gives global reach a difference.
To be brilliant. Yeah, exactly, global reach.
Yes, to spread the brilliance.
Or globally local, as I like to say. So tell me just a little bit more then about what it is that really drives you.
I think understanding that regardless of what I've accomplished, there's still more that I can accomplish. I think this, the race I had this weekend, I decided not to leave our dog at home. So I took her with us. And the host was gracious enough to let us bring her. And so I got up 5 o'clock, took the dog for a walk, and she did half of her business. So I'm like, okay, I'll take her with me to the clinic. You know, I'll stretch. I'll take her out for another walk, let her do her stuff. And, you know, she didn't, you know, she didn't completely take care of what she needed to. And so I was kind of preoccupied. But then I was like, okay, you know what? She'll be fine. You know, the race will be over in an hour or so, ceremonies for awards and everything. And so I'll just come back to her. And then myself, I had the pre-race jitters. I ended up having to go to the bathroom like 3 times. And so I was down to the wire, you know, run down to the community center, and they're already starting. And I've got my phone and my headphones, my headband, my skull cap, because I had shaved my head the day before. And I'm running behind these people. I was like, this is not going to work. I have to stop and plug my headphones into the phone, put the phone in the carrier, put my headband around my headphones to keep them from coming off, and then put my skull cap on so my head doesn't freeze. And it was on. After that, I just set off after people, passing one person after another. And that showed me at that age to have the gumption and to have the body actually follow through. And I was wearing this shirt that says on the back, catch me if you can. So I'm thinking, I cannot let as we say, nary one of these people pass me or catch me after I've passed them. And lo and behold, I ran from the back up until the seventh place overall finishing spot. And no one caught me that I passed. So it was a different feel, you know, to have that type of performance and to realize that the training is paying off. I mean, I'm learning different things that are unlocking a few more that are bringing a few more seconds off of my time as I go from week to week. And it just shows that the potential is unlimited if we care to tap it. But once you've been told, hey, you know, you're 30, you need to be a coach. That's what they do. They don't challenge it.
Yeah.
So having that unsettled feeling about having not tapped into and unleashed my full potential, it drives me. I mean, I want to see what I can do. It's like Bruce Lee. He wanted to find out what are the limits, physical limits of the human body. And as we know, he was paralyzed, and look what he came back to.
Phenomenal. Absolutely amazing story. So, untapped potential. So for our readers who perhaps aren't athletic and their dream isn't an athletic one, how would you say, you know, if they've sensed that they've got a burning desire or that they have some untapped potential, that they've got a dream that they perhaps haven't fulfilled yet or haven't quite stepped into fully, haven't embraced fully, what would you say to them? What would be your top three tips, for example, for going after your dream?
I would say spend some time alone with a piece of paper, you know, and identify what three or four things you can pursue that will make your dream a reality. You know, of course, you're going to have some clarity because I think the title is the – what is the title? It basically says, he who aims at nothing will always hit it.
Yeah.
So if they're just kind of running around, they have a dream that's really just a fleeting thought. So if they nail down what they can do to make that dream more of a reality, I think that will help them. And if it's something that will not let them rest, I mean, they see it and they think, man, I should be doing something. Some people say that you have to take advantage of the dream during the shelf life of the dream, or take advantage of the opportunity during the shelf life of the opportunity. If there's something still burning within them and they have full use of their bodies, it's probably a good time to pursue it. You know, once things start falling apart and we start looking toward retirement, that can slow our desire to break out of that mundane, everyday type of activity that we find ourselves in.
Absolutely.
Because it doesn't have to be athletic. What if they're, you know, musically inclined, and they're kids that struggle with the current note sheets? And these people figure, well, you know, you don't have to draw them in there. You know, there's other ways to achieve that objective, or, you know, raising kids. I mean, Lord knows we need more parenting, but parenting has been unofficially outlawed. I mean, so people have within them something that they can do with a great level of excellence that no one else can do. And they tend to do it for people that they know and love. Say, hey, can you watch my kids? You're the only one they listen to. Well, it seems like that person would be needed in a lot of the public school systems today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So spending some time alone and getting some clarity and finding that thing, or finding the things that you can do to not let yourself rest. You know, you've got that burning desire. In terms of being brilliant, just bringing it round to this, A lot of, at least something I was taught fairly recently was we do things so that we can have things. So we do a job so we can have a house and a car and fancy clothes so that we can eventually be happy, right? So we do so that we can have, and we kind of end up in this vicious circle of doing and having and doing and having nonstop. So that eventually we'll be happy. The being goes last.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, it's all the wrong way around. So if we were to put be first and then do and then have, so we be something first, we be happy first, we are, we choose to be happy first, so that mm-hmm. then we go to work, or we go to our chosen dream, which for you is the 800 meters, so that then we can have the gold medal. What do you think about that?
You know, seeing how we're called human beings, I think that's a great approach. That's a great place
exactly.
to start.
Putting the being back into human being, other than human doing. Amazing.
Because
I'm
heard
come
it said,
uh-huh.
go ahead.
Yeah?
I've heard it said, in order to do something, you must first be someone, you know, and if we don't exist, then we really, I mean, we aren't here to show up to make an impact. And then if we do exist, I mean, we're here, we're bodies, but we're not, you know, it goes back to the authenticity that we hear so much about today.
Mm-hmm.
Each person has a purpose. I mean, there isn't a building, at least in the United States, that you can start building that you haven't rendered the proper plans for. Electrical, the plumbing, you know, the civil engineers, the fire inspectors, I mean, the fire chiefs, everybody's going to have to check off before you even break ground. And I think if we look at people in the same way, they were allowed to show up because there was a predetermined purpose and gift within them for them to develop and then share.
Yeah, absolutely. Now hold that thought, because we're going to come right back to that. I would just like to share the call-in number, just in case anybody has a question for Carlton. So if you're in the States, the call-in number is 646-716-7979. I'll say it again, 646-716-7979. So do feel free to call in. I will get a little message that someone's there, so I can unmute you. You can ask a question. If you're not in the States, you're elsewhere, there is a chat box activated. So do feel free to type in a question there, and I will come to you live on the call. So just back to Ben Carlton. So be, do, have, I like your analogy there of the buildings. Each of us has a purpose. Each one of us has a dream to fulfill. So what would you say your purpose is, in your own words?
I'm certain it has a lot to do with fitness. I mean, because the understanding that I have tends to evade people or just not take their interest. And so to have a counter perspective that is logical, that's based in science, that comes from a place of compassion. You know, I don't see people that are out of shape or overweight and say, man, somebody needs to whoop them back into shape. What's wrong with those lazy, undisciplined people? I see them and say, you know, they have every right to have access to a qualified professional that knows how to be empathetic and understanding and that cares enough to come alongside and share the information that they have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, apart from that, I guess, is teaching. You know, something in the field of teaching, and I may even get into teaching phys education in schools, because I have no doubt it's going to come back when 70 to 90% of the 17 to 24-year-olds cannot pass the basic eighth grade fitness test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
fantastic.
I care about people in general, and more specifically along the lines of their health and fitness and what type of quality of life they can have if they focus in on it. I mean, Arianna Huffington, she passed out and fractured her bone and gouged herself above the eye. And she said, hey, if I'm going to measure success, I need to take into consideration how I'm taking care of myself. And
yeah,
I don't think selling your company for $13 million is a bad payday, but, you know, she's saying, hey, let's put all this into perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. That was, I mean, such a huge wake-up call for her. And look what she's done with it to teach others, you know, from her book to TV shows and all sorts of things that she's appeared on, preaching that message, essentially, that, you know, we need to take care of ourselves first and foremost. And that part of the dream, you know, for her of building this business and how successful she's been, the success came at a price. So how can we be that person who is healthy, who is also fulfilled and not one at the cost of the other?
Correct.
Fascinating.
That's pretty baffling how I like to call it passive training, because if you say rest, people that are addicted to training will look at you kind of cross-eyed. You just explain to them, no, it's passive training, because if the body can't recover to keep up with the demands that you place on it, you're eventually going to become sick. So there's exercise-induced illness and then exercise-induced cancers. And I think when a person is faced with their own mortality, tend to slow down just a little bit and reconsider what they're doing. Now, I'm not saying they'll change, but at least they'll consider what they're doing and see what options they have that they feel are workable. Because the ideal, I mean, I have a client that is, they're dealing with some health medical challenges, and it's being a listener and hearing what her concern is, but also being a voice of reason to say, so what we do on a weekly basis impacts your immune system. Mm-hmm. And if your immune system's already busy, we don't want to overwork it. So, you know, it's being able to have a conversation, take into consideration how they feel, but then help get them to look down the road a bit and see that if we jump now, we're going to have some problems then. Whereas if we wait now, let your body fully recover, then the demands we place on it won't be in addition to the demands that it's facing with whatever this medical challenge is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is fascinating. And given what you're also achieving right now for yourself, this going for gold, you're proving on many levels. In fact, I remember reading a book by Christopher McDougall. I don't know if you've read it, called Born to Run.
Yes, I have the book, and it's talking about the white horse and chasing the guys and eating chia seeds or drinking chia.
What was fascinating is for me about that book is that the Tara, I've got it here, Tarahumara tribe in Mexico, you know, what we believe to be sort of like an ultra distance, you do a 26.2 mile marathon, or if you're ultra distance, you might double that or sometimes triple it.
Mm-hmm.
But we run in our Nike or Adidas trainers, this, that, and the other. These guys run for miles and miles and miles on end in their leather sandals, which are pretty much falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, they don't have a concept of long distance as we do. Like 26.2 miles for us is an awful long way, but for them it's next to nothing. And they also mm-hmm. believe that as they age, the better they'll get at running, which I found mm-hmm. absolutely fascinating. And this is exactly something that you are proving in your quest for gold, that the limits that we're putting on ourselves physically, mentally, I mean, we all do it to some degree. We all have our own limitations, our own beliefs about certain things that keep us smaller than we could be. But I just found that particularly fascinating because I do come from an athletic background as well. And we come from these beliefs that, you know, as an athlete, by the time you're, depending on your sport, but by the time you're sort of 25 or 30, you're basically over with. Whereas these guys, his tribe, the Tarahumara tribe in Mexico, have, you know, completely and utterly different belief system. So that makes me wonder what on earth, when we do change and shift our belief systems, which I've done over the last few years, particularly, you know, when I am a coach and I have my own coaches, and I know you have your own coaches to take you to that level. And the experience for me about breaking down boundaries, breaking down beliefs, has been phenomenal in terms of what I perceive as possible for me. And I, you know, I always use the athletic analogy because it's something that, even if you don't necessarily relate to it in physical form, you've seen it, you've witnessed it on television.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, a year and a half ago, I got up on stage and did a TED talk, which even a month earlier, I wouldn't have done. It was an opportunity that came up. I gave the opportunity to the man I was working with at the time. He wasn't interested. And so I said, oh, no, thanks very much, not interested. But the guy, the organizer, kept coming back to me. And he said, Amy, it was January. He's like, I want you to do it. I said, no. He said, February, I want you to do it. No. March, no. April. Oh, all right then. So I gave myself about 3 weeks to prepare for it. But in those 3 weeks, I was challenged. I hit my wall so many times in terms of fear of getting up on stage and speaking and would I remember it all and all these sorts of things. But it's like when you give yourself a challenge like that and you wholeheartedly step into taking on that challenge, it's like having an elastic band, and every time you stretch that band just a little bit more, the elastic band never goes back to the shape before.
Correct.
So as you stretch and as you take away some of these limiting beliefs, as in at 45 to compete in the games and win gold at the 800 meters, you know, that's preposterous to some people. But actually, no, for you, it's something that you know that you are gunning for, and you don't have that belief that because you're that old, it's not possible.
Well,
and I just find that...
The drive isn't just limited to me. There are others. You guys at three?
Yeah,
I booked it till three.
Thank you.
All right. So I'm looking at the older athletes that are dismissing, you know, the misconception that their days are over. Mm-hmm. I mean, Meb is just qualified for the Olympics. He's 40. He'll be 41 at Rio. Joe Pavey from England. Meb's different because he's had this career of just dominance. And then Joe Pavey, on the other hand, had a 17-year career, no victories, the European Championships. She passes this girl 16 years her junior to win the gold medal in the 10K.
Wow.
And I think with maturity comes wisdom.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
you look back over, how can I, especially if you're changing something, how can I change the way I'm pursuing this to make it more attainable.
Absolutely.
And I think age, you know, it gives us plenty of opportunities to look back on things. And if we can learn from them, it's for our growth and for our progression forward, as opposed to just being miserable that time has passed and, you know, we've missed opportunities. And therefore, since we missed them, it's all over. And it's like, no, it's not over until, well, they say the fat lady sings, but until, you know, I'm in a car, that's when it's over.
Yeah. Absolutely. Wonderful. So what would you, one more question for you here on this being brilliant topic. If you could define being brilliant, because I mean, I define it in my own way, but if you could define being brilliant, how would you define that?
It would definitely be according to your purpose. You know, once you have embraced your purpose and concentrated your efforts to develop that purpose, because typically it's some gift, you know, it's something that we show it up with that may be kind of covered over or in its infant stage, and we develop it to maturity. And there's so much fulfillment in doing what we're good at,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when we share that with those around us, I mean, it's as simple as a smile. I mean, some people, I don't care what day of the week it is, you look at them and their smile just brightens your day. You know, it's
yeah,
being courteous, really. You know, being positive. I think just showing up, it goes back to that authenticity. I think that each of us has within us something that all of us need. And, you know, we are, you know, if you take a tree out of a forest and put it in a basin of water, the tree is going to survive a while, but then it's going to die because its source mm-hmm. is the dirt, you know. And we, you know, and today when we have all these conflicting ideals and worldviews that are supposed to be simultaneously correct, that doesn't make sense. So I think truth and authenticity should be partners, in the sense that if I am pursuing something, how does it relate to truth as a principle? How does it relate mm-hmm. to virtue and helping others, as opposed to diminishing others or exploiting other people. I think we have to bring truth into the equation when we look at our gift. I mean, some people are very persuasive and charismatic, but we don't want people swindling folks. You know, that's not a way to serve, you know, the communities in which we live. And so I think that would add a lot to brilliance is when people strive to develop the gift that is within them, use it for the benefit of other people, you know, not to exploit other people, but, you know, through a sense of service.
I completely agree with you. And I think in this day and age, we are beginning to see a bigger movement towards this sense of service. I know with a lot of my contemporaries in the coaching world, it's not enough to be to have me as your coach. For me, you know, I desire to give back. I desire to make a difference. I desire to have an impact on not just the people, but their relationships and the people that they affect as well. So it's not just about the one person. It's about the community. And if we look back at leadership, you know, from up to the Industrial Revolution, sort of thing, it was even up to more recently, it's been very much a command and control model from the top down. And yet, what I see beginning to happen is that this triangle is beginning to turn upside down. So we have the top dog, so to speak, at the bottom. And in the companies where the top dog is at the bottom of the triangle and asks the people who work for him, how can I serve you today? How can I be of service? How can I help you? How can I support you? What do you need? When those sorts of questions are asked, what you get, at least what I've seen in my coaching experience, is you get a community of people working together who are much more aligned. You don't get so many silos. The communication between them is second to none because they feel open enough to actually trust each other, to actually communicate, to work towards a common goal together. And so you're looking at a much more connected workforce. And when you have connection, collaboration, and communication, productivity goes through the roof because people are happier. And this is my whole sort of theory behind high performance and happiness. You can't have high performance really without happiness. When you have happiness as the foundation, then you can build upon the rest. And I think you epitomize that in your quest for this dream because it is something that lights you up. And you're happy doing it. And you give back to the community that you're coming from.
I think the challenge is, you know, we have to make happiness a study, just like we have to make peace a study, because if we don't know what it is, it's hard. You know, it's going to be very challenging when it shows up or to know how, you know, what environment is conducive to the nurturing of peace and happiness. And because they seem to mean so many different things to the average person, it becomes challenging to make it a legitimate pursuit, if you will, because someone can always offer something that they feel epitomizes happiness. Or if they're just without any ideal, they'll settle for just about anything. And then that perpetual frustration makes them think, well, why should I even bother pursuing happiness? Because it never shows up. Well, if it came and knocked at your front door, you wouldn't know what it is unless you've made it a study.
Absolutely. It's like you're saying, coming back to the pen and paper at the beginning, it's getting clarity before taking action, clarity on what your values are really. And that's one thing I definitely do sort of dive deep into with my clients fairly near the beginning is what is it that they value? Because that becomes a guidepost really for, certainly for the work I do with them, but it feeds the dream. And if they have a dream that isn't so clear necessarily for them at the moment, their values usually are a good indicator towards which, you know, we can work with and actually open up the possibilities and the dream for them. And I think, like you say, peace and happiness, they're two of my core values. And yet you know, I speak to the person next door and their idea of peace and happiness is completely different. So making
well, I guess
it a study,
along,
I agree with you.
because most people say if you know what you want, then you just have to decide if you're willing to pay the price to have it or the cost mm-hmm. to get it. And it's going to require some changes, because otherwise it would have already showed up. So we're going to have to change the way we think, the way we behave, the way we interact with other people to have mm-hmm. more peace in our life, to have more happiness. You know, we have to change the way we think about ourselves and how we treat ourselves. And I think the 21 days of brilliance and love, and looking at ourselves, how can we take care of ourselves so that we can better serve those around us, is key.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because self-sacrifice,
it
leads to contempt. You know, we start to complain about how much we've given up for the sake of someone else. It's like, well, wait a minute, take care of you first. And
yeah.
then if I need you and I call you, you can help me, instead of, well, you know, I've done without this to help this person better. And it's like, well, slow down, take care of you, take a break, sit down, have some me time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to refer back to the phone number again. So if anybody wants to call in and ask some questions, the number, if you're in the States, is 646-716-7979. I'll say that again, 646-716-7979. And just coming back to what you mentioned there, Carlton, making happiness or peace a study is absolutely true, because we are stuck in our the way we think and the beliefs that we've sort of inherited from the world around us when we were kids. And for the most part, we don't get a chance to step outside of that. And so making that a study, I would say, is absolutely number one. And what you referred to just a moment ago, the 21 days, I did a 21-day challenge, which actually finished yesterday, which anybody can sign up to and start, which I'll give you the web details now, which is www.bit.ly, so www.bit.ly/beinglove. And it's a 21-day study and looking at who you're being as you show up to life. This is what we're talking about, being brilliant. It's called Being Love. So if anyone wants to sign up to that, fabulous. And Carlton, where can people find you? What would be the best website to direct people to find more about you?
They can find me at majesticbalance.com,
mm-hmm.
as well as on Facebook and LinkedIn as Carlton Meadows, Carlton with a K, and Meadows
okay.
like, you know, the fields and books, and M-E-A-D-O-W-S.
Wonderful. Okay, so that's majesticbalance.com or Carlton with a K, Meadows, on Facebook.
Yep, Facebook and LinkedIn.
And LinkedIn. Okay, great. So if anybody has a question, do call in or type in, and Carlton is here ready to answer away. in the meantime, let's just, what do you believe it takes to be brilliant?
I think it takes more than just me. I think it takes surrounding yourself as best you can with like-minded people, people
mm-hmm.
who are looking to give back, people who are looking to develop themselves and their gifts to their fullest abilities. And, you know, it's about changing our circle of influence. I mean, if we're in the same group we've been in and we're the smartest person in that group and everybody looks to us, then we're not growing. So it's time to feel a little vulnerable and uncomfortable and move up into a group that's going to challenge us and stretch us to grow. And that's what's happened since I've participated in the challenges that you offered, is that I've had to feel a little uncomfortable. But as a result, I've grown. You know, I have a little more sense of control, and punctuality is becoming the norm as opposed to always being late. There's just a greater sense of peace because I'm not always struggling and fretting about being where I need to be on time. I can get there and I can relax. And I'm like, this is nice.
Yay.
I'm looking forward to more of this. But I think if I had said, I know, Amy, I don't need to do these challenges, you know, I wouldn't have grown. I would have continued to show up the way I was showing up, and I would have continued to be frustrated, and I would continue to be insane because I would have been expecting a different outcome, although my behavior and my habits remain the same.
Yeah.
So I think it's looking at people who you feel are giving back and are showing up in a way that is impactful and positive for those around them, and find a way to associate with that person.
Yes, absolutely. It's sort of well known in the coaching industry, there's a saying that you are the sum of the five people you spend most time with, which is a fascinating thought if you think about it. Like, if you really took a step back, again, come back to your pen and paper, and you take a step back and look at who are the five people I spend most time with. So it could be a spouse, it could be kids, it could be colleagues, it could be friends, whoever those five people are. And then if you look at the average on various different facets of life, if you look at their financial average, their happiness average, their fitness average, etc., it's almost like a law of gravity that you will become the average of those five people at some point. Even if you are the most healthy eating member of those five people, at some point, spending more and more time with them, you will start to eat like they do. You'll start to talk like they do, think like they do, etc. So it's
mm-hmm.
something to be really aware of in this, awareness of being brilliant. What does that really take? Well, this is one of the key pieces. Who do you surround yourself with? Who do you spend most time with?
And
one of the things that I have...
No, go ahead.
What were you going to say? One of the things that I created for myself this year, I've been aware of this for a few years, but this year I decided to create something visual about it as well. And I created my own board of advisors.
Okay.
And I've got it. It's a bit like a vision board. And I recommend anyone does it. I have a few more than five people on there. But I have people who I absolutely 100% totally and utterly admire on there. One of them is Desmond Tutu. He talks about peace, obviously, one of the pioneers of peace globally. I also have my dog, who recently passed away. He teaches me about unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like we have a caller. I'll get to the caller in just a moment. I also have Marianne Williamson, who she is one of the foremost spiritual teachers on the planet right now. She is just fantastic. I have a picture of Richard Branson, because he definitely brings joy into business. I have a picture of Chrissy Wellington, who's the Ironman champion, world champion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a handful of us there, but these are people who really, really inspire me for various different reasons: the physicality, the drive, the happiness, the world peace, unconditional love, etc. And I would suggest to anyone to start creating your own board of advisors, cut pictures out of them, stick them up there in front of your desk so you see them every day, and then ask them, whenever you've got a struggle, ask them, what would you do? How would you do it? And sort of wait for an answer. And it's quite an interesting game to play, because there'll be one of them that pops out particularly, and you ask a certain question, one of them will pop out and give you the answer. Such a great game to play. Now, I'm just going to go over to the caller right now, and then we'll come back to this. So we've got a caller calling from area code 415. I'm just going to unmute you. Hello. Who have we got here?
Hi, Amy. This is Risley calling.
Hi.
And hello, Carlton.
Hi, Risley.
Hi.
How are you?
Hey, Carlton. Just wanted to say you've been an inspiration to me for a while. I met you about 2 years ago in Santa Clara at a conference, and great to see you doing so well. Congratulations on your road to Rio. But my big question for you is, what's next for you after Rio, or more in kind of light of what's going on for this radio show, what is your next big challenge after Rio?
Good question.
Well, the challenge is now identifying what I'm going to get into. you know, so it'll be more of the body engineering and book, writing a book, working with Christopher Cumby to reach into the inner cities and engage at-risk youth through athletics. Because what was made available to us when I was growing up in the inner city of Gary was athletics, summer recreation programs. There was always something for kids to do, you know, to develop, you know, their artistic bent or their, we had Saturday school you could go if you were interested in drama. So kids can do extraordinary things if we give them extraordinary things to do. And I think that is a worthy cause because I'm, in a sense, a product of someone saying we have to give these kids something to do. And physical, your physical ability helps to bolster your self-esteem. It helps with your body's ability to mitigate the negative effects of stress. And so there's physiological as well as psychological benefits that these kids can take with them back into school and then perform better. And they are better situated to thrive, you know, because it helped me athletically because I wanted to be a scholar athlete. So I focused more on my grades because, you know, there was an athletic piece that could be complemented at the end of the year when they honored scholar athletes. So that's what's on the table right now. And then the PhD will be sometime next year. So I will continue to educate myself as a lifelong learner to better be able to serve in the fitness industry.
Well, congrats and good luck on that. And actually, I just got a text from another person who's listening to the call, and she asked me to ask you this. She asked me to ask you, who are the people who motivate you the most in your life?
It'd be my big brother and my little sister. My little sister is a piano phenom, and my older brother was just whatever he set out to do, he excelled at. And so those are close people I grew up with, and my sister and I, we talk a lot now. And externally, it would be the likes of, you know, Meb, who's qualified at 40 for the Olympics, placing second in the marathon trial, and Joe Pavey and, you know, Dana Torres. I mean, people who are pushing the envelope for the body's physical abilities. So it changes from day to day. Every time I come across something where some person that should be counted out is back in the game, I'm like, it just cements my will to go forward.
Well, that's great. Congratulations. Thanks so much. That's all the questions I have.
Hey, well, thanks for calling in.
Wonderful.
It's
thank
so,
you so
great
much.
To connect with, you know, the people we've met through these
yes.
high performance events or these expert academy events. I mean, we're really a small group of people. I mean, I know it seems like there's millions of us in that room, but when we go back to our own little lives, it's like I'm the only one in my little city. So it's great to reconnect, and thanks for calling in.
No, thank you.
Thank you very much, Risley. Wonderful. Well, we have just over 6 minutes left. Is there anyone else who's calling in, or if you're on the chat, then do type away because I've got it open right here in front of me. Circle of influence. Like you say, your younger sister and your older brother are those who really inspire you. And when I asked you, what does it take to be brilliant? You said something about collaborative relationships.
Yes.
Tell me
more
about
that.
What
we're doing now. You know, we connected, and it was like running into an iceberg, and you've never run into an iceberg before. You just think what's above the waterline is all there is to that obstacle in front of you, or what appears in front of you. It doesn't have to be an obstacle because you definitely were not an obstacle. It's just that what I saw when I met you was so minute in comparison to what I found out after I started following you, and to see how we could synergistically motivate and inspire each other. That's incredible. You know, I never would have thought just that encounter, you know, at the hotel in Santa Clara would, because I felt like I was a new kid on the block, and what could I bring to this arena as a newbie? and to see people mm-hmm. that had achieved so much that were genuine and down to earth and that would sit and talk with you or give you contact information so you could reach out to them after the event was very empowering. And so yeah. I see pretty much what you've described in your board of directors as such a reality. When you look at the social media platforms, you can reach out and connect with people that you may not be able to call on the phone, but you get what their philosophies are and what their strengths mm-hmm. are, and you can be inspired from following them or participating in challenges that they launched, like the last two that you extended to us. So
yeah.
there are so many creative ways to associate with people besides sitting down across the table from them in the same geographical location.
Yeah, and this is the brilliant thing, talk about brilliant, of the online world these days. I mean, it's, you know, I've reached out to people I would never have imagined would get back to me on Twitter, you know, and particularly with Twitter, you can direct message somebody, not direct, but directly tweet them. And I've had responses from people that I would never in a million years have imagined would respond to me. And it is all about building relationships. And one of the key things I talk about in these challenges you mentioned, I did one called Being Brilliant and one called Being Love. and really, when push comes to shove, what it comes down to is your first and foremost, your relationship to yourself. And, you know, the inner self-talk, the things that we tell ourselves over and over that most people don't actually realize that they are doing, that they're talking about. So when we're able to sort of take a step back, or when we're able to connect with people so who are not in our current circle of influence, we reach up to another circle and start reaching into that one, then we're able to actually begin to transform our inner world and our relationship to ourselves, and then we can start to transform the relationships to other people. And that's when our world really begins to shift, at least that's in my experience.
Well, I would definitely agree, because when I look at what you've accomplished and what you've pursued and the groups that you have assembled, you know, and the participants who also interact with each other. You know, I've built
yeah.
other relationships just from being in the groups on Facebook and participating in the challenges and commenting on other people's comments or
yeah.
liking other people's comments. And, you know, you're about being and happiness mm-hmm. and peace and brilliance. And it's somehow, you know, that's why I like the special agent part of you, because I don't know if you sit down and you say, okay, this should fall into place this way and this should be the outcome. But these groups have created some synergy amongst people who probably would have never met each other, you know, and we
okay.
encourage each other
yeah.
and we find out, hey, we grew up in the same part of the country, and it's like, what? You know, 40 years later, we find each other in one of your groups, and it's like, that's
yeah.
empowering, because I know where they came from, they know where I came from, and we can look at where we currently are and who we're associating
yeah.
with. I mean, someone that's been on TED Talks, I mean, that's like the calling card. If you've gotten on TED Talks, you are somebody. So people want to interview you as a result. And so that's
yeah.
what is encouraging to me.
We've just got 1 minute left, Carlton, so I'm going to read out your website once again, which is majesticbalance.com. You can find Carlton there, Carlton with a K, Carlton Meadows on LinkedIn and Facebook. And my website is Amy Hackett Jones, AmyHackettJones.com. And you can join the Being Love Challenge, which we've been talking about today, on www.bit.ly/beinglove. So that's all we've got time for today, Carlton. Thank you so much for being my inaugural interviewee. It's been an awful lot of fun. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome.
My pleasure. Just stay on the line and we'll connect afterwards. All right. Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Okay.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.